You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. And welcome to episode 332. And in this one, I got back on Kim Vincenti. Kim was on the show a little while back talking about her son's journey with OCD. And in fact, we've also got her son on the show today. Her son's called Jack. So Kim and Jack share their kind of joint story, obviously Jack's experience with OCD and Kim's experience as the mother and parent. So we go into lots of detail, including Jack's story, Kim's story as the parent, moral scrupulosity, being surrounded by triggers, going through multiple rounds of ERP, going to Colorado to do his biggest exposure. We discuss depression, where Jack's at now, and we talk about their new not-for-profit called Jack. We talk about how their new not-for-profit is bringing exposure response prevention therapy training to Puerto Rico. We discuss words of hope and much more. And thank you to NoCD for supporting the podcast. NoCD offers affordable, effective, and convenient therapy available in the US and outside the US. To find out more about NoCD, their therapy plans, if they currently take your insurance, or to download their free app, head over to go.treatmyocd.com/theOCDstories, or the link will be in the episode description. So thank you to both of them. I really appreciate it. It's always nice to have a kind of a dual conversation with two sides of one story. So I enjoyed it. Hope you guys do too. And thank you as always to you guys for listening. I appreciate it. And without further ado, here is Kim and Jack. Welcome back to the show, Kim, and welcome to the show, Jack.
Thank you for having us. It's a beautiful day.
Happy to be here.
Thank you. Thank you both. And many of the listeners listening probably would have heard your story, Kim. And of course, a lot of your story is it's fully based around Jack, right? So it's good to have Jack here now to
share his
side of things.
I've been in the OCD world for solidly for 10 years, but really more like 18. And this is the first opportunity I've had to do something with my son.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. That's cool. So, yeah. So on that then, I'll leave it open to you guys and where to start, because obviously it's a two-sided story. Up to you.
It is. My time at OCD Jacksonville, I focus very much on family support and what parents and loved ones go through in support of their OCD sufferers. But I've never really told our story. And it started out, Jack was 10 years old and he was on the bus to school and he heard an older high school kid talking about smoking weed, and he was kind of loud and obnoxious and he seemed scary to Jack. And I guess when he was getting off the bus, he touched Jack's arm. And literally from that day on, Jack started obsessively washing. And I think he had heard all the exhortations to say no to drugs and the drugs are dangerous and everything else. And from that moment on, he was afraid he had been exposed to drugs. So it started an entire contamination problem with him. And the compulsion was obviously washing, but it became more exacerbated that he stopped swallowing his own saliva. He was literally afraid that everything was going to contaminate with him with drugs. So we tried, we were very lucky. Unlike most people's experiences, we did find an ERP therapist right away. She was excellent. And but Jack's OCD was particularly problematic and it pretty much stopped his life. He could not go to school anymore. Everything on campus was contaminated. And so we started an intensive program and we began to, expose him to what we thought would be lower level triggers. Since the marijuana thing was what triggered him, we started using, like hemp lotion and hemp rope and burning hemp incense and on and on and on. It became, just coming up with you know, anything we could think to expose him to that drug trigger. We had Weed World magazines and movies with drug abuse, and he just wasn't responding. I mean, we'd gone through the whole intensive, and he still wasn't getting a whole lot better. So, you know, it became pretty obvious that he was going to need to be exposed to the root trigger, actual weed. And so, you know, I've always said, you know, OCD turns mothering on its head. And in that particular day, I really experienced that. I decided to go out and get a bag of weed to take to intensive. And I was driving home from, you know, getting this weed. And I just sat there shaking my head thinking, how is this motherhood? You know, I told my kid to, you know, say no to drugs, and here I am with a baggie in my purse. And, you know, the story got funnier in that we were driving 168 miles per day to go to intensive, and my car finally needed service. And I had this bag of exposures in the trunk of the car. I had Weed World magazine. I had rolling papers. I had a mini bong. I had all the hemp paraphernalia. And I left with the rental car, forgetting my exposure bag. So I went back to the service station, and he asked me to describe the contents of the bag that I needed in my car, because there were plenty of cars that model. And I just stood there like just dumbfounded. What am I going to say? And you know, finally I just lied and got what I needed, and off we went. And Jack did a second round of intensive, and you know, we did the exposures. It took quite a while, but he got somewhat better, but that trigger remained for a pretty long time. Wow. And Jack, maybe you'd like to
jump in. It feels in so many ways so distant at this point. And I think, you know, these, you know, early times, I mean, yes, I was 12, but I mean, I believe she has much better recollection than I, but yeah, I think it was in many ways kind of that scrupulosity thing. It was just kind of wanting to be good and fearing that I was going to willfully put myself in a scenario that I would lose control in some way. And I don't even know if at that age it was even that well thought out, but I think just being a 12-year-old and, you know, hearing 17-year-olds, which at that time feels like a quantum leap ahead of me, talking about, you know, behaviors that I had never even contemplated, just really threw me for a loop. What I remember from the exposure therapy is precious little. Unfortunately, especially that first round, and speaking of to the hierarchy, I mean, there was also just, you know, dealing with, in terms of going through the hierarchy, just degrees of separation from the trigger. I mean, I felt like we would go 8 degrees away, something that touched this, that touched, you know, something that touched something, until it was eventually a pair of shoes. And I remember a very particular exposure where this is about all I remember, is they just placing a pair of shoes on my lap, and I just had to sit there. And it was like a torture experiment. It was pretty horrific. But it ended up giving me the capacity to finish that, you know, school year. But that trigger of OCD really did not go away for a decade plus. I mean, it lasted from 2005 to 2018. So it had its grip on me for a very long time.
Wow. So what eventually made it lose that grip? For that specific theme or worry?
Well, I really painted myself into a corner, because I said I was terrified of weed, but I also said, like, okay, I want to surround myself with artists and be an actor. And I really like activities like surfing and skateboarding. And so, so I really didn't lend myself to communities that would keep me away from my fear. But what really did it is, so in 2015, I had done a summer in LA program for college. And I was in an acting program, and, you know, like many of my classmates, I was like, I'm going to move to LA. You know, I had been doing better. I was still in my college days. You know, I was not free from OCD. I was definitely able to function a lot better, or at least give the illusion of functioning a lot better enough to, you know, fulfill my academic duties. But I went to LA with my, you know, my class, and I vastly underestimated what, like, at that time, medical marijuana meant. And I mean, I just getting out of the car in a parking garage, walking down the street, out sitting at a restaurant, like, you would just smell weed everywhere. And I, that summer, 2015, I completely decompensated, but I fell apart because it felt like there was no escape. And that's what ultimately put me in my last and most recent round of intensive. And at the end of that summer, I mean, I really hadn't conquered it. The intensive was very much just a recollection of, you know, physical items that I needed in order to just somewhat reintegrate into society and have enough, you know, wherewithal to be able to, you know, do what I needed to do. But I moved to Atlanta for many reasons. I mean, it was a good acting market. And that's what I told myself, but it was very much also done as a fear response, because I was like, I can't handle LA. I can't do that. But then just in its own surreal way, like I felt very isolated in Atlanta, and it lent itself to a depression of its own and a sadness of its own that I hadn't known. And it was weird to have that in the absence of OCD. Mm-hmm. And my entire community, not my entire, but a large portion of my community, including my sister and her husband, and, you know, a ton of my friends were out here, including friends from Jacksonville. Like it just, LA felt like where I needed to be. And I knew I couldn't move there without conquering weed, because though I hadn't been to LA, I knew I needed to move there, but I really hadn't been back since 2015. So I was like, okay, if I'm gonna say I'm moving here, I need to let myself and my parents know that I can handle it. And so it really, I decided to do a flooding exposure. And basically I was like, before I move to LA, I am going to smoke weed. That was like, I said that, and I kind of spoke it out into the universe. this is so bizarre to say on such a public platform.
Does your mom know this?
But we, you know, I shared all this in the Today Show article that came out recently. But, you know, a lot of people, after we had been through multiple rounds of intensive, said, you know, okay, he's better, but could he smoke it? And so we went on a family trip to Colorado. Yeah. And recreational use is legal there. Mm-hmm. And so I had this like mother and son bonding. We have had a lot of hours together in intensive and through the therapeutic process, but we took a drive and went to the dispensary, and Jack and I bought some together, and we went back and we smoked mm-hmm. together. And it felt in this crazy way like the most remarkable experience I've ever had with my child. Not because it was a high experience, but because we'd been fighting this beast for 18 years. And I didn't believe he would be okay to move to Los Angeles. He was heavily campaigning for it again at that point. And I needed to see it. So anyway, we had a moment together that was, you know, probably unlike anything I had ever dreamed I would do as a parent, but it was also remarkable. And my son is remarkable. He's my hero. He has fought harder than I guess every parent of an OCD sufferer feels this way. But when I've seen what he's gone through, when I've seen, you know, OCD change up and beat up and brutalize him, and he just kept going and he kept fighting, and he's living a big, full life now, and it's remakable.
That's great to hear. And Jack, your side of that story when you were in Colorado, what was that like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I was surrounded by my family. And it's very much not the, you know, the setting in which most people, you know, have, you know, these first experiences. it was scary, but it was safe. I think by the time, you know, I got there, I think I had done most of the legwork of just convincing myself that this was going to happen. And I think that was the hardest part. And in hindsight is always 2020, but you know, it's just like one of those things where I, the second it happened, it was like, oh, this is what the fear was for 15 years. And it dissipated so quickly. I couldn't even believe it. Like I was going to tolerate the experience for the duration that the, you know, psychoactive effects lasted, but then I was gonna be freaked out still. But then I think just the experience being as normal as it was helped. And then you know, it was just funny. It's like coming out of the woodwork, you know, once I told my friends that, you know, I had this breakthrough exposure, because, you know, with my closest friends, I have a very honest dialogue and rapport about like my OCD and my fears and stuff. And it was just funny for all my friends to be like, oh, great, you're not afraid of weed anymore. Secret I've been keeping from you. So I was able to have just like a much more honest dialogue and just experiences with my friends, and seeing who like other people were in my life that, you know, may have smoked and that, you know, they were highly functioning, highly productive people. And I think that was always my biggest fear, is that I thought that if I were to ever engage in this, that I would lose all my sense of, like, it was very sorry, I'm losing my words and getting jumbled. Sorry.
You just thought you'd spiral into drug abuse was basically it. Like in your journaling, I remember even when you were a kid, it would always end up you were a drug addict laying in the street.
Yeah, I guess that's the way to put it. Just like a wretch, that I would completely lose all sense of motivation, all sense of drive, all respect from my loved ones, and that it would just, yeah, spiral till I was on the side of the road somewhere. I'm thankfully not there anymore.
No, absolutely. Yeah. It reminds me of that initial trigger of seeing that. Kim, did you use the word obnoxious teenager? Or I can't remember.
Well, yeah, he was being very loud and bawdy and bragging about getting high. So he, you know, he just seemed scary to Jack.
Yeah, and I guess where I'm going with that is obviously he wasn't homeless on the street addicted to drugs, but in your young mind, he was this.
Yeah, I came from a school, you know, I was in elementary school, and then I switched to a school that was grades 6 through 12. And so, you know, I had been very sheltered, and then I was suddenly, you know, around kids who had, you know, had vastly different experiences and were much further along in their development than I was. And so this was just, I had never encountered, you know, even hearing about the, you know, substances or anything outside of, you know, perhaps like the, you know, morning news. And in that case, it was always a negative and something scary, something to be afraid of. And, you know, also just growing up in a, you know, conservative, you know, Southern environment, like it's just, that's the culture. And I just took it to the nth degree.
Fair enough. And what did your mom do, Jack, throughout the, you know, however long it's been? What did she do that was really helpful for you on your recovery journey?
Everything, yeah. Everything ever. I mean, she was my biggest advocate. I mean, from the very beginning, I mean, she identified, I mean, before we could label it as OCD, she knew that, you know, something was very wrong, you know, as was indicative by the fact that like my skin was cracking and raw up to my elbow. So it didn't need close forensic inspection, but she identified that. And, you know, like she said, she drove me 168 miles a day and multiple times a day for weeks. She connected me to therapists that, I was 12. I had no wherewithal knowing about what resources to look for. I mean, she set everything up for me. And I mean, even as I progressed into adulthood, I mean, she had began making such headway as an OCD advocate. You know, she started connecting with people in other cities and other markets. And so I am so unbelievably fortunate to feel like I've had like a network of care everywhere I've gone. And that is so largely because of her. You know, I moved out here at 24, which is, you know, an adult age, but no, my mom helped me find my therapist that I use out here, and she's kick ass. And like, I am so, 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 so lucky. I mean, I feel like I get a lot of credit for like my resolve and everything, but I've, you know, especially in my grad program, just, you know, I've become painfully aware that like the biggest thing that sets me apart is that I was able to get intervention. And the fact that that's such a barrier to so many people is just having access to treatment at all. And I had someone who didn't give up on me though. And so I was able to keep getting that treatment because it didn't stick. I mean, I learned all the tools very early on. You know, the steps of ERP are not very complicated. You know, put yourself in the feared situation, habituate, you know, don't engage in the compulsion. But I knew what was right to do to, you know, make my fears go away, but that didn't make it any easier to do. And now my mom's running away because she's so upset.
She's on her headphones, she can't hear that.
Even though it was so straightforward, it didn't make it any easier. And I mean, that's the worst thing about OCD is that no matter how much you know, logically know that your fear is irrational, it doesn't make it any better whatsoever. She never gave up on me, and for that I am eternally grateful.
And I'm blessed because Jack and I continue to have this close relationship. And when new triggers come up, or when, you know, there's a new crisis at the forefront, he does call me. And I'm really glad he's getting married, because I'm not going to live forever and somebody else is going to have to take the torch. But, you know, he navigates each and every one, you know, the interesting thing, you know, I've been president of OCD Jacksonville. I've been, doing advocacy for 12 years. I, you know, have worked really hard at this, but I find myself, when he calls me, still reassuring. And I know the lessons, I know them. And, you know, it's why I have so much compassion for other families, because you love with your whole heart, your child. And when you see them suffering or you hear their pain, it just comes like, you know, in a primal way. And, you know, I have to repeatedly remind myself to shut that down. You know, and when new things came up, like depression, Jack was in a very serious accident in Bali 2 years ago. And he had a traumatic brain injury. He and his fiance were found unconscious on the side of the road on a little island off the coast of Bali. And we had to get them emergently home. And he had to have a lot of surgery on his face. And we had to treat the brain injury. But serious depression kicked in after that. And that scared me to death. I was used to OCD. I knew OCD back and forward. His OCD didn't really scare me. But that new level of depression with it terrified me. And so, you know, the mental illness journey is difficult and complex and unwieldy for everybody that experiences it. And I have such profound compassion for everybody that tries to navigate this road.
Yeah, really, really good points. And I like that you said how, even after all this time, how hard it is still not to reassure sometimes. Because, yeah, you're human and you care. So that's, yeah. It goes against that. And Jack, your mum obviously shared kind of what happened a couple of years ago. And that sounds really horrific, with the accident and then the following depression. Where would you say you're at now with OCD or mental health generally? Like, do you still see a therapist from time to time or weekly, or how does it look like?
Yeah. I am a far cry from where I was 2 years ago. That was a really dark time. I also had alopecia. I developed alopecia like 2 months before the accident. So I was also losing my hair at the same time. So that was just a very difficult period, but I was able to get on a medication that helped with my hair, and I obviously recovered from the accident. And in light of everything that's gone on the past 2 years, like, I am feeling extremely grateful. I mean, smoking weed with my mom did not cure my OCD. Like, I have plenty of, you know, obsessive thoughts still. I think that's the most interesting thing, is that it has switched to more of that. I still do have some contamination stuff, but like, as of late, I think it has kind of switched up where it's just more of that pure O. And like, especially as I'm in grad school, just like worrying about my grades. But I feel so fortunate. You know, I'm here in LA. I am more than 2/3 done with my grad program. I am working as a behavior therapist, and I'm managing to still audition and act occasionally. So I'm juggling, and I'm keeping the balls in the air right now. And it's exciting. I mean, it's not, you know, I think there's always going to be a part of you that's, you know, looking over your shoulder, you know, wondering when that's like, okay, I'm enjoying myself, but, you know, when's something going to happen? But I feel good right now, and it is a journey. You know, I always feel so cautious when I say, you know, when I speak in any sort of public space, because I still am journeying, you know, and I think that is going to be what is ultimately most beneficial to me, you know, as I go into work. In a professional sense, I think just having that compassion and empathy for other people who are going through the same thing. And even though my triggers may not be the same, that I can still recognize, you know, the underlying emotional state that it makes them feel, and like that kind of paralysis. And, you know, while I think it's so much easier, you know, it's like my mom said, you know, you can know all the tools, but I think, you know, it does help to have that support system. And you may not be able to give yourself the best advice, but, you know, being able to pass that on to others is huge and incredibly fulfilling. So,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, like, you know, OCD isn't just affects the person, it affects the system, the family system. So it's good to have you both sharing either side of this. I guess before we move on, is there anything else of Jack or Kim of your stories that you think's worth sharing? And obviously, Kim, I'll link to the episode in the show notes, the episode we did where we talk much more from the parent side of things.
Right.
But yeah, if there's anything else.
No, just that I very much think that the OCD community is moving toward recognizing what a difficult journey this is for the support system of those that suffer, you know, the family, the spouse, the siblings. I'm really, really grateful that that's happening because it is difficult. It is incredibly difficult. And for those of us that are clamoring to find resources, clamoring to find, you know, support systems, the fact that there's so much, your podcast, you know, is just, you know, the start of the story, but everything that the IOCDF is doing, the weekly live streams, there's so much content now. And it's really become a transformative time, I think, for awareness in OCD. And that said, we need more. We need more. It is still impossible for families to find resources or therapists in various regional areas. So we want to, I just, you know, my heart is just to see more.
Nice. Yeah.
It is exciting though.
No, go for it. I was just saying,
I was just going to say it is exciting though, to me at least, to see like the paradigm shift that has gone on the past, 15 or so years, even just, you know, from when I started my mental health journey, just in terms of its global, like just the recognition and acceptance and awareness. Like I especially see with younger generations, like I love seeing on Instagram a video of a TikTok because I'm too old to have Instagram or to have TikTok. So I see my TikToks on Instagram, but like seeing kids talking about like mental health and the ways they cope, like I had none of that when I was little. And there is a desperate need for more like official professional resources, but it is so encouraging to see, you know, that kind of stuff going on just from, you know, other people. And I think I was so hesitant, you know, from my own upbringing and everything to share my own mental health journey. But my confidence has definitely been bolstered by some of these younger kids who are, you know, fearless and sharing and, you know, not being afraid of, you know, there being any repercussions to, you know, being honest about, you know, who you are. So
yeah, good way to put it. And I get my TikToks through Instagram too, so
yeah.
So let's talk about your new not-for-profit or non-profit, Jack MHA. It'd be good to share that, and obviously I guess I kind of can guess, and I'm sure the listeners can, why it started. But anything you want to share on that, and also the logo, which is a jack in the box, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So I got to this season in my life, and COVID has done this for many people, where I realized I need to be with my people more. And I've got parents on, you know, the Northeast. My children and grandchildren are in California. And my husband's heading toward retirement and wants to do more volunteer work in Puerto Rico. So
yeah, speak that out into the universe.
Yeah. Yes. Retirement, husband. Anyway, I just wanted to be in a place where I could do advocacy from wherever I'm at. And I loved my years at OCD Jacksonville. I feel like we did amazing things, but I needed to be in a place where I could, number one, I wanted to partner with Jack, my heart, the reason that I care about this cause. And Jack is going to be a therapist, and he is now willing to talk about his story. And it just seemed like the right time to start a nonprofit of our own, because I've looked into the eyes of sufferers and their families in 10 years of family support groups. And I've seen the pain and the frustration and the compassion fatigue when it gets ugly and all those dynamics that are just so incredibly difficult. And I just know that there's room to do more. I don't kid myself that I'm going to be able to be this great, OCD warrior, but I can do my part. I can do my part. And, one of the things we want to do is start training clinicians in underserved areas. So one of our first initiatives is we are sponsoring a BTTI in Puerto Rico. Definitely, they've experienced hurricanes, earthquakes, COVID, and we all know, the statistics of the population, and there's precious little resources for them. So we're sponsoring a BTTI in Puerto Rico in November. And it's also a full circle moment because Dr. Eric Storch at Baylor and UNC Chapel Hill is doing the genomic study for OCD in Latinos. So we hope very much to, provide research participants for them, because Dr. Storch was the first doctor I sat in front of and cried my eyes out and said, my son is really sick and he's not getting better. And Dr. Storch told me he will get better. Mm-hmm. And so I love that I've been able to reconnect with him through this journey. And, we've got a lot of things. Our logo, you spoke to our logo. It's a Jack in the Box. So when Jack had the accident and I was just thinking of him, I realized, it's not just OCD that has you trapped. Mental illness boxes you in. It, and how do you get somebody to scale the walls of that box? It's treatment intervention. And, it just so happened his name was Jack, but the Jack in the Box image is very much, something that a metaphor for what I want for all people struggling with mental illness is to get out of that box and live life again. And so that's why we have that logo. But Jack is the reason that I have a heart for this work. And what we want to do going forward is just continue to support families, support sufferers, support clinicians, and reduce the stigma and get access to education. We want to do scholarships. We're going to be doing a maternal mental health initiative in May, scholarshiping moms to go to the ERP school. Since they're home with babies, that's a good way for them to get some information about ERP. So that'll be happening in May. We've got a art therapy initiative coming up in September or October. And we're just continuing to see where we can make interventions.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, absolutely. And your husband is Puerto Rican, right? Is that?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. So that's obviously one of the drivers, I guess, to get BTTI over there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's amazing. I always think the BTTI training should be taken everywhere. It's such a quick way to train already qualified therapists to treat OCD.
The beautiful thing about this is it is going to be virtual and it is going to be taught in Spanish. Oh, cool. So that will really help the clinicians there have a really firm understanding.
Yeah, good.
If it's taught in their language.
Yeah, agreed. That's awesome. And Jack, anything you want to add to what your mom said?
And I can't think of, this is her, I am honored to be the namesake of this, as it were, but this, I am very much here to support her. I mean, she's incredible. Again, this is, my mom has built this. She is a warrior. Like, she is the greatest advocate I have met. And I am so I'm just, I'm feeling incredibly lucky, just incredibly, incredibly lucky. And grateful to be a part of the team in any capacity, you know. She has connected with so many, you know, as I am entering this industry, you know, she has found her own, you know, niche and her own way to, you know, do advocacy and to get involved. And she's connected to so many people. And I'm at a loss for words. Yeah.
Thanks. She's amazing. You're a sweetheart.
That's awesome.
We're also very fortunate that we're partnering once again with the lifestyle brand Natural Life. We're coming out with a brand new Fearless collection that will help support Jack mental health in September. So if you want to check out Natural Life, they will have a whole new Fearless line trickling out and launching probably this fall. But we'll be there at the IOCDF conference, and we're just really looking forward to meeting people in our new lane.
Awesome. Yeah, I've got some, I was looking over here, I've got some Natural Life stuff on my bookshelf there.
Okay.
So it always inspires me. Oh, actually, yeah. And I'm actually drinking, it's chip now, but I'm drinking out of my mug.
I have that exact same mug.
I love it. I use it daily. So it's great things never came from your comfort zones. And it's like a mountain camping type image, which I enjoy. Anyway, so yeah, so that'd be cool when that comes out. And is there any way people can get involved, help you, fund you, anything like that?
Well, go obviously follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Visit our website at jackmha.org. There's a place where we, you know, we want to tell people's stories. We want to tell family stories in particular, you know, what it was like for another mom or another dad, you know, getting a child, having a child with this diagnosis, and what was their journey to wellness? Because I have learned from every single family I've encountered. There has been some nuance, some difference that has, you know, sparked a light in my head. And you realize how symptom complex OCD is and how unwieldy it can be. And I just feel like we all learn from the stories of others. Thus, you know, while you have your show, it's true. It's true. It's such a valuable way to learn. And so, you know, we have a submit your story on the website, and we hope that people will tell us what it was like as a parent to navigate this.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so I'll ask you both now from the different sides of the same story. Just anyone listening, you know, son, daughter, or mother or father going through this, just words of hope or wisdom or insight or anything you want to share to those people.
Well, for me, it's never give up. I mean, we failed the first round of intensive. I had to go deep for the second round, you know. You just can't imagine what it's going to take to get to the other side of this sometimes, but it does happen. I mean, Jack's been fighting for 18 years. He's probably going to fight OCD for the rest of his life. I think that, you know, telling somebody you're going to be cured is probably a disservice, but having those tools in your toolbox to pull out really helps. And it's a lifelong journey, and one that you navigate day by day. You can't say what's going to happen in 2 months or 3 months or when I finish intensive or when I finish school. You know, I'm worrying about, like Jack said, I'm worrying about my grades right now, or, you know, finishing a paper, whatever, you know, he's ruminating on is going to change in another 6 months. And so, you know, just to accept that it's going to be dynamic and to believe they can get better, because everybody does get better. It's a roller coaster. It's up and down, but keep your eyes on the prize, and that's wellness. And there's lots of ways to get there.
Nice. Thank you. And Jack, what would you tell some of the listeners?
Yeah, I mean, she nailed it. But I mean, I think in that same vein, you know, to any other people, you know, with OCD is to be kind to yourself. I think, you know, especially as you're, you know, embarking in earnest on the, you know, the mental health journey, or, you know, and doing the exposures, it can, you know, it can feel like failure if, you know, you're unable to engage with, you know, a feared stimulus, or if you're, you know, if things become too hard. And I think that, you know, recognizing that you don't have to win every battle to win the war, I think is important. And to encourage people to reach out and to form support systems. I do think those, you know, as great as, you know, professional intervention is, I mean, there is so much to be said for having those people who are in your corner, who you can turn to, and have an honest dialogue with, you know, when things get hard, because this is not some, you know, nobody should have to go this alone. And I would encourage people not to do that and to reach out.
Yeah, really, really good
And I
point.
Have one more thing that go I do want to add. And it's the number one thing I experienced running family support groups, and that people would come to me and say, my kid's been in therapy for years and they're just not getting any better. Or my spouse has been in therapy, they're just not getting any better. And I say, are they doing ERP? And they say, what's that? You know, sometimes therapists don't know what they don't know. You know, there's people that say, oh yeah, I treat OCD, but in fact, they really don't. I would encourage everybody that suffers and every family member that loves somebody that suffers to check out that therapist and find out what their qualifications are to treat OCD, because it's a game changer. Getting the right therapeutic intervention is what is needed.
Yeah. Yeah. Valid point. Absolutely. So, Kim, I may have asked you this last time. I'll ask you again. And of course, Jack. So the question is, if you could both pick up the phone and call the 20-year-old you, what do you tell him or her? So maybe Kim go first, give Jack a chance to. So what did you need to know at that age?
That every preconceived notion I had about parenting was probably going to be different. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that, my passions have changed. You know, what I really thought was important to me as a young woman are vastly different now. I, you know, it's honestly not about me or the Kim show or what I can do. It's, I have incredible passion to help those that suffer. It has just stolen my heart. I've just seen it so much and learned to love the people that I've met along the way. And if I can do anything, to make a difference, that's what's important to me. You know, in the early days, it was like my kids getting into the right schools and building the right house and, you know, all the superficial things that you think are important are actually not.
Good point. And Jack?
You know, the answer I was pondering was far less eloquent, because, you know, I was just thinking my 20-year-old self, I'm not as far removed from my 20-year-old self. That was 8 years ago. So I'd probably look at him and just start laughing a little bit. Just to tell myself that you beat weed, which I think, like, I know that sounds, it's such a simple answer, but I think, I don't think I could have comprehended that as a 20-year-old. Like, I even 8 years ago, even 6 years ago, I mean, Yeah, 5 years ago. I couldn't, until it actually happened, until I got through that exposure, I don't know that I believed it would ever happen. It was something that I was just gonna, I was content to live in dynamic tension with, you know, for the rest of my life. And I had kind of resigned myself to not, you know, having certain experiences because I have this fear, but that's my lot. But it doesn't have to be that way. And it's not that way anymore. And that is a very long-winded answer, but there you go, past Jack.
No, I like that. I like that. I like how you said you were kind of resigned to this is how it is. And then Obviously you've learned that's not how it has to be. Okay. So again, Kim, you probably had this question, but you've got a billboard. Jack, you got one in California. Kim, you've got one in Jacksonville. What do you want written on that billboard for everyone to see?
Oh, Stuart, I hated this question last time and I hate it again because there's so many things that you want people to know. I just think love covers all. Mm-hmm. Love covers all. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. Just to love somebody enough that no matter what you're facing, you can get through it and together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. And Jack?
What I would want on a billboard
For
OCD.
It doesn't have to be OCD related. Literally anything you want.
Just anything I want. Oh man, Stuart, you shouldn't ask me that.
keep it PC.
of course. I said this earlier and I'm just going to echo what I said earlier, but I think it's just that it's going to be okay and talk to people. I did not give enough people credit for how compassionate they would be. And I think I had it ingrained in myself that, you know, the stigma that people wouldn't be there, but people show up if you give them the chance. So be kind, be patient with yourself and ask for help.
Yeah. Yeah. Great one. I like that. So lastly then, is there anything else either of you wish you could have said or shared today?
No,
sure, it'll all come to me in about 30 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the way it rolls. just come see us at the conference. Wish us luck. We want to do good things for this cause. I'm so grateful to be, you know, just one little foot soldier in the army that's trying to help the OCD world. And I just am really looking forward to the next chapter. And I just ask for everybody's support and kindness and compassion as we move forward in this new venture.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll put links to all your social channels, website, etc. in the show notes for this
episode.
Thank
you so much, Stuart. No worries. I'm so grateful.
Thank you. Well, look, Kim, it's great to have you back on again. And Jack, obviously, it's great to meet you and hear your side of things.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Right. Thank you so much, Stu.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast.
And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. If you want to find out more about NoCD,
head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.